Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Talk on Books I Love. This show is the first in a series of shows that will expose the truth of the ugly face that is warring as we speak. The face that demands the destruction of Israel and the elimination of all the Jewish people. Tippi Feldenstein here asking you, talking to you on Tippi Talk about books I love to read and write or both. In this hour, I usually speak with authors and publishers and wannabe authors. I love books and I love people who create them. Books are eye-openers. They tell us stories of lands far away that we've never visited. They teach us things we never heard before. They tell us stories about people and experiences. And books can really change our lives and can function as magical, enlightening places of entertainment. And that's why my biggest treasure is my books and my biggest love is writing. But today, I bring you a book that is so much more than a book. It sounds funny, but this is a book that is a true lifesaver. It's information that can hopefully function to save lots of innocent people, to wake up the unaware and inform them that there is something sinister going on that they must address. And it's not going away if it's ignored, just like at Hitler's time, it didn't go away just because a lot of people ignored it. The wave of hate, and they hoped it would go away, it just didn't. My entire family was murdered by Hitler, and now the new face of anti-Semitism has shown its ugly face, and it's up to every decent human being to do whatever they can to stop it now. The truth does matter, and the truth is that if we don't take action, it will consume us. As a matter of fact, even if we do take action, it still may consume us, but at least we must try and do whatever we can. When you look at the slide that is showing right where you're looking at, you'll see a man blowing a horn that we call in Hebrew a shofar. The reason you're looking at it is because a shofar is a call to action. And this show is a wake-up call to the global humanity, to the Christian community, to every human being that values the truth and to Jewish people around the world, and to Israel. If you love Israel, of course, it's time to take action. If you're Jewish and have nothing to do with Israel, it's time to take action because you are their target as well. If you're Christian, you should pay attention because this movement is opening the door to a mass destruction of anything that doesn't resonate with them. And even if you're Muslim, you should pay attention because if you dare to disagree with these people, you will be killed just as quickly as any Jew. If you value the truth and understand that the truth matters, you must pay attention and dig into this blatant big lies and the small subtle lies that are being fed to our children in universities, to our society as a whole, because when you believe a lie, you are trapped until it's too late. So this show is a call to humanity to wake up and destroy the wave of hate that is being perpetuated in our universities all over the nation. It's about anti-Israel bias, it's about anti-Semitism, and it's about hate. We will be speaking shortly to Tammy Rossman Benjamin about Amcha Initiative, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to investigating, documenting, educating, and combating anti-Semitism at institutions of higher education in the United States. We will be also discussing BDS, which, if you've never heard of it, it stands for Boycott, Divest, and Sanction, which is a movement that demonizes and delegitimizes Israel, and it's asking for the complete elimination of Israel. So you must ask yourself, what does Zionism mean to you? What does the rise of hate against a group of people mean to you, and what are you going to do about it? We will also be discussing how our very own American government is funding this hate campaign through a program called Title VI, which Tammy will explain. I'm not really sure exactly how it works. She's going to explain how it's being used for anti-Israel, anti-Semitic bias, and it's in violation of federal funding. Tammy Rossman Benjamin is the executive director of the Amcha Initiative, which is loosely translated as the Ordinary People. She has lectured internationally and widely on the development of physical threat and the intellectual safety of Jewish students in American universities and American university campuses. She's organized workshops. She's a lecturer in the University of Santa Cruz, which is actually a great place in California. I love that place. In 2009, Tammy filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Education for civil rights violations, which is going on in our campuses. And on 3/11, the federal investigation of her complaint was finally started, which we're very excited about. She investigates anti-Semitism activities on campuses, and she educates people about the activities that are taking place on the campuses. She uses studies to address the problem that she's discovering. It's a topic that too many want to avoid and really sweep under the carpet, but hopefully we won't let them do that. Israel is under attack 24/7, and unless we take action, they are going to win. I would like to welcome Tammy Rossman Benjamin to Books I Love. I'm very excited to have you here, Tammy. Thank you so much for joining us today to discuss this really important matter.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to your show, Tippi. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm really, really happy to have you here, and I really feel that this is one of the most important topics of the century today. It's not just because it's about Israel and about anti-Semitism, but it's about a wave that is going around in so many places that people are not talking about. So the first thing that I really am really curious about is, what's the turning point in your life that motivated you to create Amcha and to invest all this work that you do?
You know, it was a kind of a slow progression, but it began a little over 10 years ago when I was had been teaching for a few years at the University of California, Santa Cruz, teaching Hebrew and Jewish studies, and was very obviously very close to many Jewish students since most of my students were Jewish. And they were complaining to me about the sort of the virulent anti-Israel bias of their professors that they were experiencing in class, in lectures, in readings, in conferences that they would attend. And these were things that made them, as Jewish students that identified with the Jewish state, that made them feel very uncomfortable, and that their classrooms and the university in general was a hostile environment for them. And so I began to really pay attention to what was happening. I began to notice that that there were many, especially starting from the beginning of the Second Intifada in Israel, that on campuses there the programming and the, you know, not just the student, let's say the Students for Justice in Palestine or the Muslim Student Association, not just the student programming, but the faculty and the departments were bringing speakers and having programs and events that were really virulently anti-Israel, and so much so that some of them were even anti-Semitic. At least that's how it really felt to me and seemed to me and felt to my students. And it really sort of crescendoed, and really, the major turning point for me was an event that happened in 2007 at my university, which was that it was a conference. It was an academic conference called Alternative Histories Within and Beyond Zionism, and it was sponsored by 8 departments at my university: history, sociology, politics, women's studies. There were 8 departments that sponsored this event, and the whole purpose of the event was to claim that Zionism was an illegitimate ideology and Israel an illegitimate state, which should be eliminated. And in fact,
wow,
all 5 speakers who spoke were all professors. One after another agreed that Zionism was racist, that Israel was an apartheid state, a Nazi state, and that it an evil state that should be eliminated. And the final speaker, in fact, talked about how to engage in a successful divestment campaign as part of the BDS movement, a successful divestment campaign against the Jewish state. And I couldn't believe it. And the students that I knew, the Jewish students, we were all traumatized by that particular event, because it was really faculty members who were bringing their virulent hatred of the Jewish state onto campus, into a conference hall. There were students that were there for course credit that were looking at this stuff that their professors at the departments had all sanctioned and brought to campus. And it was pure anti-Semitism. It was really calling for, as you said at the beginning, the elimination of the Jewish state. And it was horrible. And the most horrible thing of it was that it was given absolute, complete legitimacy, academic legitimacy, by the fact that these were all professors, some of them distinguished professors who were speaking. This was sponsored by eight different, upstanding departments, history, sociology, politics, anthropology, and it was given the seal of academic approval, so how could one really argue with it? And it was just from beginning to end anti-Semitic. So that's when I said to myself, this is unbelievable. This is really outrageous. This is people who really hate the Jewish state and perhaps
they
even hate the Jewish people, and they want to destroy the Jewish state, which is really viewed by Jews around the world as an assault on the Jewish people, not just Israel. And it's perfectly legitimate, it really reminded me and those who were with me and the students of Nazi Germany, pre-Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was when I really became motivated. That was really, I think, a turning point for me that I just couldn't turn back. I said, I really need to devote a major portion of my life to addressing this issue and to getting others to address this issue. And out of that, really, Amcha was born and continues. And the problem, when I experienced that in 2007, Tippi, it was eye-opening, but it was also, as far as I was aware, and I began to do research. I actually wrote an academic paper about that conference that I published in a journal, and I did extensive research about it. And what I discovered was that this was probably the first such conference really questioning, not even questioning, saying that Israel did not have a right to exist as a Jewish state, but even if it were a debate, right? Mm-hmm. How is it possible to have a debate about whether or not Israel should exist as a Jewish state? What other country is academically debated whether or not it should exist? There is no other country, only Israel. And so I said to myself, well, is this just my university? Is it just my university is so deeply, entrenched in this, anti-Israelism and anti-Semitism? And within a few short years, these kinds of events, events which are deeply anti-Israel and anti-Semitic, pop up all over the country and with departmental sponsorship. Many of them are sponsored by student groups like the Students for Justice in Palestine, but a great many of them are sponsored by academic departments, which really, again, gives that from my perspective as somebody who is on faculty in a university, that's what really gives the seal of approval and academic legitimacy to these ideas. Because students are students, they'll get away with what they can get away with, but when an academic department puts its name onto an event, it gives it complete academic legitimacy, and it becomes fact, it becomes truth and knowledge,
so,
and
so it sounds really like they have succeeded in infiltrating the university system almost completely to the point where they pretty much can do what they want and nobody really stands in the way. But in order for that to happen, the infiltration would have to be pretty high up, don't you think?
It is high up. I mean, we find the infiltration, as something that I wrote about in the book about academic boycotts. I mean, we find in the humanities and social sciences in particular, we find, the majority of members of a department, for instance, have, including the department chair, have endorsed the academic boycott of Israel, right? And so when you have whole departments that have really been, poisoned in my, to my mind, they've really been poisoned with this hatred, it's very, and they can certainly control what happens in the department and who gets hired and who gets fired and gets tenure, et cetera, and what the course curriculum is, and also what happens, let's say, in the academic senate, the group, the faculty group that really governs the faculty at every single aspect of its academic programming. When that body gets taken over by faculty who themselves are promoters of these boycotts of Israel and other kinds of anti-Israel activism, really activism. I mean, they've actually taken over the university in a sense.
Right.
To promote their political agenda. This is not about scholarship. This is not about what we understand, a university is supposed to be about, the search for truth and knowledge and educating the next
generation.
This is complete political indoctrination. This is taking over the university and using it as their own political platforms and playgrounds to do exactly what they want to do, which in this case happens to be destroy the Jewish state. Happening in many ways. I mean, it's not just about Israel, but this is something that is so fundamental to the hatred now, this anti-Israelism, which is really an anti-Semitism, which is really, this such a great animus against the Jewish state that you want it to not exist, that this is, it really is part and parcel of what we're seeing everywhere. It's the single biggest topic of the way in which the university becomes politicized in almost every case has to do with Israel.
The question is that because it's such a complete infiltration, is there any way that we can replace these people or kind of begin to change the mode by taking them out? Or are those people that are totally protected by the university and will never go anywhere?
Well, they are protected by tenure. I mean, the tenure system is is pretty airtight in America and really protects faculty, mostly good faculty. I'm not saying that everyone is like this, but in some fields,
but a big majority.
In some fields, right? My research, in fact, showed that of the boycotters, the academic boycotters of Israel, 50% of them, 50% come from the humanities, and about 40% or 30-some% come from the social sciences. So between them, there's close to 90% of those who are boycotting Israel come from the humanities and social sciences. And within those, like some departments, as I said before, some departments are sometimes the majority of the members of those departments, like Asian American Studies and Ethnic Studies, sometimes English, Sociology, Education,
Women's
Studies for sure. Whole departments will have a majority of faculty that actually embrace an academic boycott. So you asked me what can be done essentially. So we're not going to these professors are not going to be fired, and in a way I would not advocate for that. What I do advocate for them to do is to do what they're paid to do, which is to get scholarship and teach their subject,
and
stop using the university. Exactly,
do
their political advocacy on their own time and dime. I mean, that's just what to me. If the university, if you come, I mean, I am as you might imagine, I'm extremely pro-Israel. I'm a big Zionist, and in my life outside of the university, I do a lot to promote Israel and to promote Zionism, because that's
keyword
in my heart.
Outside
that's what
the university, right?
Outside the university, exactly. But when I when I go in and teach, I'm neutral. I'm neutral. Now, does that mean that every
because
I always am
job.
Neutral and you can never find me not say maybe you'll find something, but I really try hard to be very neutral, to you know, to not say what my particular position is on anything, and I expect that of my colleagues at the university, but that's not what happens. And that's not what they even think should happen. They actually believe, and their departments are completely supportive of this, that their job is to actually be political activists, to promote social justice, to go out and fight the oppressor, to fight racism, to fight sexism, to fight Zionism. So Zionism has taken its place next to racism, sexism, Zionism, right? It becomes the evil of the 21st century.
Right, and the truth is irrelevant. The truth of what's really
right.
What Zionism is or what Israel is irrelevant. So for
people that really are not aware of what BDS...
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Tiffany. Sorry. I was just going to return to the question you had asked before because I didn't really answer it, and
yeah.
I apologize.
So go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. And
but I
just
wanted to say that I really think that what we need to do is we really need both the faculty, but the faculty aren't going to do it on their own. The administration needs to push them to create really clear standards of behavior in terms of, you know, when is a professor abusing the privilege of academic freedom? I mean, academic freedom, everybody agrees faculty need academic freedom for a healthy, university environment. This is sort of the core of the university is academic freedom. But what's happening is that faculty members are abusing that privilege, and they're using, for instance, a mathematics professor at Cal State University Northridge has posted on the Cal State Northridge website his page that's called the Boycott Israel Resource page, and it's filled with horrible pictures of dead and mutilated babies that the Israeli soldiers have killed, and statements like Israel is the most racist state in the world, and horrible,
which were
really
probably
anti-Semitic,
killed by Hamas,
but anti-Semitic canards. But think about this, Tippi. He is a mathematics professor,
yes.
And yet
yes.
The university says that they won't pull down the site because it's protected by academic freedom. So to come back with what I think needs to happen is there really needs to be a reckoning by faculty and a reckoning by administration saying, look, this is clearly a mathematics professor with a Boycott Israel webpage. That's not academic freedom. That's just political indoctrination and advocacy, and it doesn't belong on a university campus. Just like a conference like the one that I described to you doesn't belong on a university campus. And there have to be limits set and rules set about what is and isn't a legitimate use of academic freedom. And, you know, so I'm not calling for punitive measures. I'm calling for really clear standards of behavior that are enforced by faculty and enforced by university administrators that say, look, this is beyond the line. This is a line beyond which you cannot go. But right now we have nothing like that. It's a free-for-all, and the universities are out of control.
You know, it kind of brings to mind something that I heard in the late 80s that I kind of thought it was a joke. But I heard a tape by somebody that claimed to be a KGB member, and he said that they had a plan to infiltrate the United States and implement their agenda. And it was in the 80s, so I don't really remember exactly what it was, but I do remember him saying that the first place that they will infiltrate is the psychology department in the universities, because from there, psychologically, they can spread their agenda very easily. I don't know why I just thought of that, but it's interesting that there was a plan. Somebody did speak about it. It's not something that randomly all of a sudden is here. It's something that happened because somebody planned it, because somebody had that agenda. But
well, I do think there is an agenda, Tippi. I agree. And I think that a lot of the faculty that engage in the kinds of behaviors that I've been speaking about identify themselves as Marxists. And they mm-hmm. and they understand that they really do believe that the university is really the way in which the revolution that they are so eager to see happen is going to be affected through it.
Mm-hmm. That's
so,
exactly,
you know,
what
they,
this guy was saying. That I just got the chills, because maybe he was telling the truth. Maybe I should have took him a little bit more seriously at a time. But for people who are listening who don't know what BDS stands for, can you explain that? Because BDS is about the boycotting of Israel, right?
Right. It's effectively all a kind of boycotting of Israel, which is, but it's, so the B stands for the boycott. The D stands for divestment, which is a secondary boycott, which means divesting one's holdings in companies that do business with Israel. That's the D for divestment. And sanctions are sanctions that are really brought against, I mean, it would be, individuals can't bring sanctions, but a government can, you know, can sanction Israel and bring sanctions against Israel, and, you know, not allow sort of economic trade or military aid if there are sanctions against Israel. So it, but really is an attempt, and it comes from, it really does, the whole game plan for BDS is found in a document that came out of the first Durban conference. Do you remember that? The one in it was the United Nations conference on racism in Durban, South Africa, and it was
when
in 2001. And it was right before the reason that people sort of forget about it or have you know sublimated it is because it happened about 11 days before 9/11, and so once 9/11 happened, everybody, you know, the whole world was really riveted and focused on that. But really, for Jews, a turning point. You know, you talk about turning points, but a turning point for this virulent hatred of the world against Israel really happened in 2001 at the Durban conference. And there's a document that was produced by about 3,000 NGOs that met to discuss this racism, this conference in racism. And of course, as you know, the UN, you may or may not know, but the UN is just so extremely biased against Israel in every single way, shape, and form. But this was really an example of that, where Israel was painted as an apartheid state. The analogy between Israel and apartheid South Africa was made very, very clear, that Israel needed to be completely isolated from all the other nations of the world. There needed to be, boycotts and sanctions, that Israel was a racist state, that Israel it was an apartheid state, and that Israel basically needed to be it didn't say this, but the language was eliminationist language. This state needs to be completely isolated and ultimately eliminated through a campaign of isolation which is what boycott is. I mean, boycott is intended to economically, socially, culturally, and academically isolate the Jewish state. Why? So it can be destroyed. And so it comes out of that, this BDS movement, and it really began to pick up steam, you know, after that in about 2002, and then it grew and grew, and then in 2005, the Palestinian BDS National Committee put out a call for BDS, and there was the Palestinian Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel, PACB it's called, that also came out at that point. And from there, from that point, that call was put out, then all the groups in America, then there was in 2009, I believe, the U.S. campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel was a direct response to PACB, to the Palestinian boycott, but it's all based on really this Palestinian BDS National Committee, that group, the major group within that is the PLO, as well as Hamas and the PFLP, which, you know, the latter two groups are on the U.S. State Department's list of foreign terrorist organizations. So it's clear from who's in these groups that are putting out this call for boycott that this is an eliminationist call. This is a call to eliminate and destroy the Jewish state. And we do it through a number of means. You know, we do it through boycott, which seems to everybody to be very nonviolent, but ultimately it's to weaken the state in order for armed resistance and really terror against Jews to destroy the Jewish state. So that's what BDS is. It's really picked up steam tremendously so on campuses. I mean, nowadays one of the main ways in which it manifests itself on university campuses is through what are called divestment resolutions, where usually, in almost every case, it's a member of a group called Students for Justice in Palestine, which is a student group that has really responded to this call. They are all about boycotting Israel, and they work in response to the Palestinian BDS National Committee's call for boycott. And they come up with a resolution which they bring to their student senates, you know, the student government, whatever it's called, the student council. It's called different things in different places, and oftentimes they've actually managed to get themselves onto the student council or into the student senate. Sometimes they're even the presidents of those groups that are supporting. We've seen this recently, where the president, him or herself, is actually a supporter of the boycott of Israel, and they were elected to really by their constituency to promote this BDS resolution, and then they bring this to their student senates, and they they vote on it, and they last week they voted affirmatively, so they endorsed a boycott resolution or a divestment resolution at UCLA. So these are, this is...
You're talking about UCLA in Westwood, in
yes,
Los Angeles?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, it's happened, several of the UC campuses have voted, and a few successfully, including UCLA. And so it is a movement that really aims at destroying the Jewish state. The vote at UCLA is not really going to. It's a symbolic vote ultimately, because the university has made clear that it will not divest its holdings from businesses that do business with Israel. It will not. But it doesn't matter, because the damage is done. It's a symbolic damage,
because
on the one hand.
It starts as a symbolic. Do you think that really this is not just anti-Israel? This is anti-Semitism, anti-Jews all over the world. It's maybe in the name of anti-Israel, but do you think, because I think it is, again, it's anti-Semitism. I don't think it's just anti-Israel, anti-Zionism.
It's definitely anti-Semitism. I mean, to the extent that, they're calling for an elimination of the Jewish state. And what does that mean? If you think about what does it mean to eliminate the Jewish state? Are we only talking about Israelis? Well, let's look at it. I mean,
not really.
45% of the Jewish people, of the total Jewish population in the world, live in Israel. So God forbid something were to happen to Israel, and there goes almost half of the Jewish population. It's unthinkable. Plus, how the extent to which, Jews feel that, forget even the religious perspective, one should forget it. I mean that when,
without the religious aspect. Yeah.
Even without thinking about the religious perspective, I mean, if something were to happen, given the clear and present danger for Jews in almost every part of the Middle East for sure, and in much of Europe and in South Africa and other places in the world, I mean, the levels of anti-Semitism are higher than they've ever been throughout the world. Right. Given that situation, if something were to happen to the Jewish state, if God forbid there were no more Jewish state, what would happen to the Jews throughout the world? No Jew would feel safe anywhere in the world.
They probably would be attacked immediately or at the same time. So definitely the problem is here, and definitely if somebody wants to get more information on it, and they can go to your website, and what's the website that they can go to if they want more information?
Absolutely. It's AMCHA Initiative. That's our name. It's AMCHA Initiative, INITIATIVE, AMCHAInitiative.org. And
okay,
they
so
can find about
org, not dot com.
Exactly.
That's important. The .org is important because
the .org is important.
Org.
Otherwise, you won't get to us.
AMCHAInitiative.org. Right.
Exactly.
And so if somebody wants to take action, because obviously in a little way or in a big way, everybody can do something, and they can always donate and help you do what you do, which is also very important. Whether you donate $5 or $5,000, it doesn't really matter. You just donate whatever you can. That would definitely help. But other than that, where would they go and what would they do kind of to be guided onto what it is that they can do? Like, for example, my alma mater is Brooklyn College. So
mm-hmm.
If I want to take action within the university, or if I want to do something, I have no clue what to do, where to go, who to talk to. What would you suggest if I go to your website? Is there something there that can guide me?
Yes. So if one thing, two things you could do. The first thing that I would recommend that everybody do is right in the, at least at this point, in the upper right-hand corner of our website is a place to sign up for our bulletins, which are periodic. They come out however often they come out with different information about what's happening on campuses across the country, but specifically when there's a specific problem. And usually, almost always, when we put out a bulletin, we have what we call an action alert. So I'm trying to remember whether we did this for Brooklyn College or not, but we certainly address the issue. I know I addressed the issue in an op-ed in the New York Daily News about Brooklyn College and about a boycott, a BDS workshop with Omar Barghouti and Judith Butler that was actually sponsored or co-sponsored by two Brooklyn College departments, political science and I think sociology, but I could be wrong about that, but certainly political science. And, and urging what I would do in that case is to urge what I call university stakeholders like yourself and alumna, right, to urge alumni, to urge parents, to urge students, to urge donors, to urge elected officials in New York. In fact, many elected officials did get involved in the case of Brooklyn College because they were outraged. They were outraged that a school that was given money from the state was using mm-hmm. that money and the name of that university to actually promote the anti-Semitic boycott of Israel. Right. So to get people, we're all about engaging the people, as AMCHA really means, the ordinary people, but we think of them as university stakeholders. They have a stake in these universities for any one of a number of reasons. We want them to get involved first to know what's happening and then to help us to take action. So if you go to our homepage on the upper right-hand corner, we have a, get involved, and you can sign up for our newsletter that comes out usually when we have situations that arise that we want to A, inform people of and educate people about, but B, ask for their help, right? We have letter writing campaigns, we have petitions, and one of the things that we would like to do is to have people take a university that they are fond of or concerned about, and it could be for any one of a number of reasons. They're an alumnus, or their child goes there, or they give a lot of money there, whatever it is, and keep track of it.
Yeah.
Monitor it. Look at what's happening. Look at what's happening in different departments, in the Middle East Studies program, on campuses. You know, Look at the, you know, go when they have the apartheid Israel week, you know, and look at the apartheid wall that they put up, and look at all the agitprop that they do in the campus square. Talk to Jewish students on the campus. See how they're feeling. And then let us know. Let Amcha know. Let us know so that we can actually engage the university administrators. Just yesterday, I had a conversation with the dean of students at Wellesley College, because there are some issues that Jewish students are feeling very harassed and intimidated and threatened at Wellesley College, primarily having to do with the Students for Justice in Palestine and their events and their actions and behaviors. And, you know, and I had a conversation, a very frank and a very good conversation with the dean of students at Wellesley College to explain to her about the Students for Justice in Palestine. They have a group that's a very new group, the freshly minted SJP group that is engaging in behaviors which are pretty outrageous. And and so I wanted to explain to her what we know, because we've done extensive research about the Students for Justice in Palestine across the country. We've discovered documents from one SJP group, which is really, I think, articulating what's happening all over the country in terms of SJP groups, which is explicit directions for how to shut down and disrupt Jewish student events, right? So it's a student group whose mission is, at least in part, to shut down Jewish student events, you don't have to be a genius to say, look, a group like that maybe shouldn't deserve to be part of the student organization.
Student body,
we can do that, and we can tell people to write, you know, to the, if there's a problem at Brooklyn College, to write to the president, you know, Karen Gould or whoever, to write to the president, the chancellor of the system, to tell them what to say and how to, you know, and especially if they're alumni, to tell them to use the fact that they're an alumnus or an alumna to make, really have influence and make and have an impact. And one of the projects that we're just beginning now is to actually begin to create groups of stakeholders, so alumni groups at different campuses. So if we could in the future have or work with and help to establish a group of alumni at Brooklyn College, let's say, that were really concerned about the campus climate for Jewish students. They were really concerned about what was happening in the classroom and what was happening in the campus square. They could keep track of it. They could report to us. They could actually go as a group and speak to the university president, and they'll say we're alumni of Brooklyn College, and there's a real problem here that we're concerned about. And the president will listen to alumni because the university needs alumni donor dollars to exist. So we definitely want people to engage in our work, because that's why we created Amcha. That's exactly why we call ourselves Amcha, which is a name that very few can pronounce correctly.
Yes.
But it's a meaningful word, it really does mean sort of a grassroots, rank and file, ordinary people movement to really make a difference. And we need everybody. If we don't stand together, as you were saying at the beginning, I just really loved your introduction to this whole topic.
Yeah.
I really loved it, because I do, I am exactly like you. I really believe that if we don't, we may not even be able to defeat what exists at this point, but we can't stop trying. And if we, you know, and if we don't come together on this issue, and for us, the issue isn't Israel. You know, I mean, I understand, that there are a lot of groups, and they're important groups, and I don't want to in any way, say anything bad about their efforts. They're really important groups who actually help students to be pro-Israel, to stand up for Israel, to defend Israel, to be proud Jews on the campus. And, in fact, their work is essential. But that's not what Amcha does. What Amcha does is it's not about defending Israel. It's about defending Jewish students, whether or not they want to defend Israel, right? It's about defending the Jewish people and their kids on college campuses. And,
right,
and I
so
think
the
that
Jewish
that's
still safe.
Right, and I think that that message is non-controversial, right? If we were a pro-Israel group, then we would argue with other pro-Israel groups, you know, about whatever, the different platforms and the settlements and the government, but that's not our issue. Our issue is just the safety and well-being of Jewish students on college campuses, and who can argue with that? Who can say, no, we don't care about Jewish students on college campuses?
Right,
so,
you don't deserve to be safe, but that's basically what they are saying, that the Jewish students don't deserve to be safe because they're Jewish.
Well, I mean, but nobody could actually say that out loud without feeling exactly. So in terms of bringing people together, which is what our goal is, which is what Amcha's goal is to actually bring people together, to bring members of the Jewish community especially, but not only, and our Christian friends and supporters and our Muslim friends and supporters and, you know, Hindu, everybody. You know, everybody can see, anybody, you know, decent people everywhere, doesn't matter what religion they are, can look at hatred and can look at the blind hatred that is anti-Semitism and can say, this is outrageous. And we have to fight this. Just like there were righteous Gentiles in the Holocaust. And, I mean, it's not only a Jewish issue. Yes, it is a Jewish issue, for sure, because they're talking about my people.
Jews.
And, you know, and destroying my homeland. But it's beyond that. It really is a global issue, and it's a global issue. And people get it. People understand that if you are allowed to turn your virulent hatred of the Jewish people against the Jews and against their, you know, their homeland, then really nobody on this planet is safe. And so I do think that decent people everywhere understand that, whether they're Jewish or not. And so we really do try to bring everybody together in terms of addressing this issue, because it is such a clear and present danger. It really is an existential threat, and it's coming to levels that we, in my lifetime, for sure, but even before that, you know, even beyond that, we've not felt, our people have not felt this kind of hatred before, you know, certainly not in my lifetime, and we need to
the last time that they have felt that was before World War II, before Hitler was destroyed, but this was simmering. It wasn't something that we felt. So the question is, do you have any kinds of workshops or education for students in those campuses that might be hearing about how Israel is in apartheid and they do want to get an education of what Israel really is, or any other point of view? Do we have any kind of workshops within the campuses?
Amcha doesn't, because, again, we don't work directly with students. We work on their behalf. There are wonderful, wonderful organizations that we work with who do work with students to give them just the tools that you're talking about. You know, groups like Stand With Us and Hasbara Fellowships and CAMRA and I don't want to forget anybody, but the Simon Wiesenthal Center, the Zionist Organization of America. There are many groups that actually really have reach out to students and do fantastic work with them and are essential just in terms of materials and, you know, support, moral support, financial support, whatever the students need to be able to stand up for Israel and to stand up as proud Jews. And there's Hillel too that can do a good job, and Chabad on campus really helps students to feel supported in their Jewishness. So there are organizations, lots, and there have to be, you know, and we have to all support them too, because they're doing an important, really an essential service. So that's what I would do is to actually refer students to one of those, the organizations that we actually partner with.
So how is it that they use, because I read something here, that they actually use federal funds to fund this whole campaign of BDS. How is it exactly that they use that, and can it be stopped?
So, okay, well, you're raising a good point. I mean, first of all, they use... they use funds, and they use university funds. And when you're talking about, let's say, a state university like the one that I'm affiliated with, the University of California, California State University, Brooklyn College is another example, any state university, and there are, in every state, there are state universities, at least, you know, one or several, they get money from the state. So we're talking about money, all of the things that I've talked about, this sort of egregious misuse, you know, even, you know, Professor Klein, who uses his, you know, mathematics professor, the state university website to promote the boycott of Israel, you know, that's, he's using taxpayer money and taxpayer, you know, resources that are funded by the state taxpayers. But in terms of the federal government, and the,
I think
you referred
about Title VI.
Exactly. So let me explain Title VI. And this actually has to do with Middle East studies programs. Now, there are lots of different programs, as you know, as I mentioned before, there are lots of different departments that are engaging in promoting BDS. But in terms of Middle East, the Title VI, we're specifically talking right now about Middle East studies programs that receive money from the federal government under, it's called Title VI of the Higher Education Act. Now, Title VI of the Higher Education Act was established in 1965 during the Cold War. And it was established, actually even before that, the precursor in 1959, but then in the Higher Education Act in 1965. But it was at the height of the Cold War, and it was really established in order to give federal monies to universities who were training and who could train students to be sort of U.S. National security professionals, right? People who can work in the government, who could work in the State Department, who can work in the CIA, who could work in, you know, who could actually have training in specific and knowledge about specific regions of the world that are essential for U.S. National security. Certainly Russia was a major, during the Cold War, Russia was the key country, but as the years have gone by, other regions have become more prominent, and since 9/11, so the Middle East has been really at the forefront of these regions that the government is hoping to get universities to train individuals who will then come and, you know, share their expertise, their knowledge, et cetera, with the country in terms of sort of working for the government in some way. So what's been really happening, that's in theory, that's why the law was established.
So the funding for that was given to a program called Title VI.
Exactly, Title VI of the Higher Education Act. It's right, which is
right.
Different from a different. What happened in about 2000 in the beginning of this last? So in 2001, 2, and 3, especially what became apparent was that Middle East studies programs were taking millions and millions of dollars from the federal government, and they were using it. And they were actually thwarting the purpose for which the money was given. So they were having programming and classes and educating students, that were extremely biased against America and against Israel, and B, that were refusing to have anything to do with the government. Right, they didn't want to go into the State Department or have anything to do with the government, and in fact, the professors themselves were sort of boycotting the government service and wouldn't write recommendations for their students, et cetera. So the faculty of these programs were actually they were delighted to get millions of dollars to fund their program and to fund their salaries, but they were using the money, again, as I had been explained at the beginning, for their own political purposes. And so what we did, so then let me just say, in 2008, because of this sort of extreme anti-Israel or political, sort of the politicization of these programs being anti-Israel and anti-American, and not allowing other perspectives to be, you know, to come out. There wasn't any balance or, you know, fairness in the programming. And some of them were, in fact, even anti-Semitic. So in 2008, the Congress added a stipulation to that, to the Title VI law, which said that those who, the universities that were taking the funding, needed to demonstrate a diverse, they called it diverse perspectives and a wide range of views. Meaning it couldn't, it had to be unbiased. It can't be only anti-Israel programming. It can't be only anti-American programming. There has to be diverse perspectives and a wide range of views. And a kind of a balance, if you will, although balance is a kind of a dirty word in academia, but you know, to be so egregiously biased is clearly not in the best interest. It's clearly not in the interests of national security or the public good. Mm-hmm. And so they added this stipulation, and wouldn't you know it, the Middle East Studies programs have been continuing to sort of flout the law and flout the intention of Congress and continuing to do what they did. So we did a study of UCLA, their Center for Near Eastern Studies, which was one of the recipients during the 2010 to 2014, they were one of the recipients of this money from the federal government, one of 20 Middle East Studies programs. And during the three-year period that we looked at this program, it had received $1.5 million from the federal government under Title VI. And we did a very comprehensive and careful study. My colleague, Dr. Leila Beckwith, is my co-founder of AMCHA, but she's an emeritus professor at UCLA, and so this was, you know, it was a very academic study, and we looked at every single Israel event that they had in their outreach program that they had recorded. They themselves recorded it, and they put it up on their website, and we actually analyzed every single event that was recorded, and we did an analysis. We looked at it in terms of bias, and we looked at it in terms of anti-Semitism, according to the definition of the U.S. State Department, how we identified anti-Semitism. And we found that 93% of the events had a clear, unambiguous anti-Israel bias, and 75% of the events, so three-quarters of the events, had some kind of anti-Semitic content, including condoning terrorism, certainly demonizing and delegitimizing Israel, the Jewish state, you know, calling for or in some ways denying Jews the right to, you know, to a Jewish state, that Israel should not exist. Promoting boycott. There were four programs that we watched that actually were promoting, where someone was speaking and promoting BDS. And one of the events, actually, people had, you know, on their seats, they were given forms that they could fill out to join the divestment campaign against Israel. And this was all sponsored by the Center for Near Eastern Studies that had gotten $1.5 million. Not only that, but the three directors of the program, there in the 3 years that we looked at it, there were three different directors. All three of the directors themselves were endorsers of the academic boycott of Israel. And one of them was a major founder of the U.S. campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel. And even worse, I mean, that's all about Israel, but in terms of, like, students at UCLA, all three of the directors had endorsed a petition to shut down the program sending students to Israel to study abroad. You know, there's study abroad programs for many to many different countries. There's a study abroad program to Israel, and all three of the directors signed a petition, which actually one of the directors herself had written and circulated to all University of California professors. All three of them signed it. So here are professors where Israel is one of the countries under their purview, right? In fact, obsessively so. They had more events about Israel and the Palestinian-Israeli conflict than about all other, you know, conflicts in the Middle East all put together. And so here they are obsessively focused on Israel, and yet they are opposed to having anything to do to any relationships with any Israeli university or scholar, and they are demanding that the Israel program for students to study abroad in Israel be shut down. So this is the kind of thing, so we wrote about this, and we've been working together with other civil rights and Jewish organizations to actually bring this to the attention of Congress, because they're right now reauthorizing Title VI and, you know, considering the funding for the next funding cycle. So they're actually doing this when they get back from their recess, and they're going to probably begin doing this at the beginning of the year. So we want to bring this example that we've really documented very carefully and it's not like anecdotal evidence. It's really a very comprehensive study of what happened in one Middle East studies program that received, you know, actually in the whole funding period, it probably received close to $2 million. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money for the taxpayers
to
be paying.
To do a lot of things. Yeah.
To do a lot of harm.
I wish I can say I'm shocked. Yes. Yes, to do a lot of things that is illegal, really, in essence. So they are obsessed about Israel, but they're obsessed about destroying Israel. It's basically
right.
Their obsession. Yeah. So that sounds like it's a lot deeper and a lot more infiltrated than most people are aware of.
I think it is, and right, and I think that we have to. It's really wonderful that you've devoted your show to this. I'm just, I'm very thankful, and I just think it's so important that people understand what's happening on college campuses, and really commit themselves to raising their voice about it, because unless we can, you know, coming back to what you said at the very beginning, Tippi, unless we can really come together on this and work together to combat this, it is going to consume us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm really thankful to you for devoting so much time to AMCHA, an organization that makes people aware of what's going on. I really do think a lot of people don't want to know, but you know what? They don't have any choice. They have to know. This is what's going on, and this is what we have to work with. And so definitely, I'm really grateful to you and to everybody that works with you for what you're doing. And this is the first show in the series of what I'm going to do, but it's definitely not the last, and I definitely am going to contribute and to be there of service as much as I can with you, stand with you, and make sure that this, you know, that we do whatever we can. We have to do whatever we can at this point now, before it's too late, if it's not too late already, which I really hope it's not, but we definitely have to do it now. And so this has been very, very informative and very educational, but it's really very scary. Also, I have to say, part of me is really afraid, but being afraid is okay as long as it doesn't stop you from taking action.
Correct,
and
right.
I say, yeah, be afraid, because there is something to be afraid of, and if nothing is done about it, there's going to be a lot worse going on. So basically, the bottom line right now is for you to go to the AMCHA Initiative.org. Check it out. Take a look at it. Do whatever you can. If you belong to any university, go for it and do it. There's also a chapter that you wrote in a book that describes a lot of what you talked about. So I urge everybody to take a look at that. What's the name of the book that you wrote? I think you mentioned
I have an essay in the book.
You
it's
didn't
called
write
the Case.
Book. You wrote.
I did not write the book. Mm-hmm. Right. It was written by. It was edited by Carrie Nelson and Gabriel Brom, two professors.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. The name of the book is "The Case Against Academic Boycotts." The Case Against
mm-hmm.
Academic Boycotts, and there are a number. All the 25 essays are written by scholars, by university professors. And it really is, I think, it's a big book, but it's very mm-hmm. worthwhile, and there are, you know, so many interesting and eye-opening and important, analyses and about the academic boycott and how harmful it is, and even, you know, some ways, at least I suggest in my own essay on the academic boycotters and who they are and how they work. Some solutions, some ways to actually address the problem of these academic boycotts coming onto the university campuses.
Yeah, exactly. And to quote what you wrote in that book, I'm going to read what you wrote here, which the problem is not with this faculty taking such public positions, something they're entitled to do both as U.S. citizens and as faculty members engaged in extramural expression of their political opinion. The problem arises when such political convictions become so fanatical that classroom instructions become coercive, students' rights to express alternative views are compromised, or discussions become intimidations. That's the problem universities need to face with a level of courage and honesty little in evidence now. And I think that really sums everything up, and that's really what AMCHA is all about. So I really would like to thank you very much for contributing tonight. This has been really, really important, like I said, to everybody's life. I do plan to follow up with you and to check it out and to see what's going on, how things are panning out, how the reactions are. If we have any successes, I'd like to celebrate with you. If we have any challenges, I'd like to contribute and help through it. And if anybody
Terrific.
Else is listening, yeah, has any comments or anything else to say, you can leave a comment right below, right here. If you like to follow and find out what we're going to be talking about in the future, all you have to do is push the follow button right here on top, and you will get notification of what's going on, where we're going from here. If you wish to give us your opinion, you can always email me at efactorshow@gmail.com. That's efactorshow@gmail.com. And I will definitely read all the emails that I get. I'd like to really, once again, Tammy, thank you so much for joining us. And also let everybody know that my book, Planning Power, is available at Amazon.com. All you have to do is go to Amazon.com, type in on the search line, Planning Power. The first book that will come up is probably going to be my book. And if you see my name, Tippi Felsenstein, then, of course, you know you got it. Check out the first chapter, see if it talks to you, see if it resonates with you. If you like it, great, let me know. If you don't, it's okay. You just read an interesting chapter. Until we meet again, have a wonderful weekend, a wonderful evening. I hope this opened your eyes, and I really hope that you're going to take action. It's time to take action. Tammy, thank you once again, and God bless you. I really
thank
wish
you
a lot
thank
of success.
You. Thank you, and happy Thanksgiving.
And happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
Thank
Have a
you.
Wonderful one.